I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
And welcome to Bird Calls, everybody. We've got a great show coming up for you. I'm excited to talk to James Curry, will be our guest. He is the creator of Birding Adventures TV, and he's also the guy you see on that show. He's the star of the show, if you will. So we'll talk to James. We're going to start with James pretty soon. This is Chris Bozak, your host of Bird Calls. We come at you every Sunday from 1 to 2 on 1490 WGCH and streaming live on the internet at birdcallsradio.com. And Bird Calls Radio has all the archives of past shows. If you miss a show, we've had some great guests on through the last couple months and since we started Bird Calls. So all the archives are on birdcallsradio.com. So check that out. We're sponsored by Wild Birds Unlimited in Darien and Bedford Hills, New York, and also Outdoor Sports Center in Wilton on Route 7. Go check out to find folks at those places. And so let's jump right into our guest. We got a great guest today, so let's get started. Welcome to Bird Calls, James.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be on your show. Thanks a lot.
Okay, yeah, no problem. So slightly different medium for you. You're actually, a lot of people write bird columns. I'm one of them, and I have a radio show, but you're one of the few who has a television show on birding. Tell us a little bit about Birding Adventures TV.
Yeah, Chris, well, Birding Adventures TV is really about getting people excited about birds and changing the perception of birding from that of a passive pastime to that of an active adventure or sport even. And basically what we attempt to do on the show, it's almost like a travel show where we travel around the world to some of the best birding sites on the planet, including those in North America. And we feature the culture, the birds, the scenery, other wildlife, and other adventure activities that can be done in that particular location. So while birding is the thread of each one of our shows, it's certainly not the only thing that we feature on our shows. We try to make the program interesting and accessible enough for somebody that's perhaps a non-birder and deciding whether they'd like to get into bird watching or birding.
How long have you had the show? When did you create it? And tell us a little bit about how it all came about, how you started it.
Sure, Chris. Well, I got to the States in late 2007 and started watching US TV on some of the sports, the outdoor sports channels, and noticed that there were countless numbers of fishing shows and hunting shows, and I started thinking about that and wondered why there's not a show on bird watching, seeing as birding is so huge in the country. We all know how many birders there are in the United States. It's a massive growing pastime, and yet there's no one show dedicated to bird watching. So we got thinking about that, and we actually modeled our show on the fishing and the hunting shows, whereby we enlisted the support of several sponsors. Nikon is our title sponsor, for example, and we have quite a few other sponsors. And we used that sponsorship, those sponsorship dollars, to purchase airtime, get on the air, and obviously produce what we think is a really good adventure show. So we're now on our fourth season. We started off on a couple of local television networks, and we progressed until we got onto Versus, which has now been bought out by NBC Sports Group. So we're now on NBC Sports Network on Mondays and Tuesdays, twice a week, and available in 80 million households across the nation. So it's been a great journey for us.
Yeah, that's great. And, I've seen some of the episodes. They're terrific. And, someone might be thinking at home, geez, a show on bird watching. My gosh, I can't think of anything more boring, but you make it exciting, and you have a great enthusiasm for it, and that comes across, and that's obviously a big part of the show. So how do you make a show about bird watching something that people want to watch?
Well, I think, Chris, the key really is passion. I mean, obviously you've got to be totally passionate about what you do. Our show is running a relatively small budget. It's just two of us, occasionally three of us in total that will go and travel and film. So So we really have to make do with limited resources, and I think that we get around that by demonstrating amazing passion and being very mobile. You know, to be able to chase birds, you've got to be a small, mobile crew, and I think that's one of the recipes to our success, is that we don't come with a big, cumbersome film crew. We're able to get into places that film crews otherwise wouldn't be able to get into places easily. And, you know, the secret recipe really to our show, and it's not such a secret, I mean, a lot of people do this, is the quest. We've got to have a quest for one particular species, and we try to do that on every show, where we will go in quest of a particularly enigmatic species from somewhere around the world and feature the adventure, the search for that bird. And along the way, we're meeting different people, other wildlife, and, of course, other birds, too. So that's really simply what we try to achieve through the show.
Okay, and that quest bird, it's always fun when you find it. So tell us what you call that bird that you're looking for.
Yeah, we call it every show, that's the quest for our golden bird.
Right.
And, you know, when we go to a destination, we all know that nothing's guaranteed when it comes to birding, so we'll have our target golden bird, but we'll always have a backup just in case we're unable to secure good footage of the golden bird. So I would say that, you know, 9 times out of 10, it all pans out and we do get the golden bird we're looking for. But occasionally we'll not secure good footage, or a circumstance will arise where we actually see some amazing behavior from a bird that we didn't plan on being our golden bird, and we'll obviously change the focus of the show to focus on or to feature that particular species.
Okay, and you mentioned the station it's on, but tell us how if someone hasn't seen it yet, how would they find it? I mean, the wonderful world of Google can help you. If you Google James Curry, that's C-U-R-R-I-E. And then you also have another show. So tell us about the other show and how you could find these shows.
Sure, Nikon's Birding Adventures TV is on NBC Sports Network, and it is on Mondays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time and Tuesdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And our season begins January 1st till June 30th every year. So we run for 6 months on NBC Sports Network. We're then on approximately 5 other minor networks, and a lot of them are regional. The Texas Channel, Resort and Residence TV, Untamed Sports, Village TV Ohio, and Wazoo Sports Kentucky are some of our other networks that also carry the show. However, if you're online and you can't, or you struggle to get the show on television, all our shows, once they've aired on TV, we do put them on YouTube. So all you need to do is go to YouTube/Birding Adventures and sign up to our channel, and you can view all the shows in HD in most cases on YouTube. And that's quite nice, because you get to view the full show, full screen on your computer.
Okay, yeah, that's great. And, you know, you're going to see more if you check it out, and I encourage listeners to do that. You're going to see more than just somebody walking through the woods in a pair of binoculars. I've seen you on a zip line. I've seen you on a parachute. I've seen you playing cricket with locals. So it's not just about bird watching, but it's about enjoying the areas that you visit, right?
Absolutely. I mean, for us, you know, it is so much more about birding. It's more about, in many cases on our shows, the journey rather than the bird itself. So the things we encounter along the way in quest of a particular species is all important. I remember one of our early shows that we did in Panama at Canopy Tower. We went in quest of black-crowned antpitta, which is quite a tough bird to find. We only secured 2 seconds of footage in total of the bird, but yet we did a full half-an-hour show on black-crowned antpitta. So we slowed down that footage, and we flipped it, and we put it in slow motion, and we did everything we could with it, but ultimately the show was about the journey and the quest. And I think that's also important, because, you know, people need to realize that birding is never a guaranteed thing, and that when you go in quest of a bird, sometimes it's tough. So we like to also portray the realities of birding and the fact that, you know, sometimes you are not going to get really, really good visuals of a bird, but yet you can still have an awesome time doing it.
Okay, yeah, that's a good good theory to live by, and whether it's birding or whatever, it's always about the journey. Now, I obviously have a bird show, but every once in a while I'll branch off into other types of nature and wildlife. And tell me about some of the wildlife that you have come across that is not quite bird related. And you know, sometimes you include that in the show. Tell me why you include that in the show as well.
Well, I think it's very important to realize that a lot of birders travel to destinations with their spouses and their families. And a lot of the spouses and family members, kids, may not be as into birding as the birder themselves. So it's very important in our show, we believe, to incorporate other aspects of a particular destination besides its birds. And obviously wildlife comes into that and factors quite largely. So, you know, we've done plenty of shows in the Caribbean, in South America, Central America, where we've featured animals like American crocodiles. We've featured black caiman in Guyana. We've done, you know, shows on otters and manatees and incorporated those into shows. So any other interesting wildlife in a destination, if we can get footage of it and if we can weave a good interpretive story about those animals, we're definitely going to include it.
Okay. Now, you've led, you've been all over the world. In fact, you spoke recently in New York City at the Explorers Club, and then I think you were going to hop on a plane to go somewhere else in the world. So what's it like to, you know, to travel around the world looking at birds?
Well, selfishly, it's great, Chris. It's a great job. I don't know whether my family would agree that it's great for them because I have a wife and three young kids. But, yeah, we travel all over the world, and I must say it is quite tough being away from family for that amount of time, but we try to limit our traveling for about 6 months and filming for 6 months, and then generally I'm home for 6 months. We do have another project that we've been working on recently, which is a National Geographic show called Aerial Assassins. That has just aired on Nat Geo Wild, the National Geographic Wild channel, and it's been an hour-long show on Harris's hawks in the Sonoran Desert. So occasionally I'll go off to film special projects like that for National Geographic, and we're actually hoping that we'll get a full series based along those lines, and along the Aerial Assassins lines on Nat Geo Wild, which will be very exciting for birding.
Yeah, that'd be great. They have you know, a lot of great programming there, and on this aspect of nature and wildlife and that. So I don't see why I would think a bird watching one would be a good fit for Nat Geo. So James, how, since you travel around the world and you're native of South Africa, and you've been all over. So how are birds and bird watching perceived in different parts of the world?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Chris. I mean, I grew up and I spent all my life in South Africa. South Africa has a very dedicated and very strong birding following. So the culture of birding is very big in South Africa. You go to places like the UK where it's huge. It's almost almost like a religion in the UK. It's so big. And then obviously you come to the States where, of course, birding is also big and widely accepted. Australia, bird watching is big as well. We went to Australia. We met a lot of great bird watchers there. You know, there are other parts of the world where birding is a very, very small part of the local sort of culture and the local scene. And these are a lot of the undeveloped countries in the world, or underdeveloped countries in the world, we call third world countries. But ironically enough, these countries have some of the best birding. So
yeah.
It's really interesting, and it's actually one of our goals through the show is to also highlight bird conservation and the need for people in these countries and places where there's a lot of bird habitat, for people to get invested in birding and bird conservation for, you know, the preservation of bird life for future generations, not only within their countries, but for people of the entire planet.
Okay. Now, you've each show kind of has a message of conservation in it. Why is that important to get into the show, and why is conservation in general important for you?
Yeah, Chris, it's always important. I come from a conservation background. Conservation is generally an issue which television networks like to steer away from. you've got to be very careful that you don't overdo the conservation message in shows. Television these days is all about excitement and adventure and blood and gore and, you know, as much activity and as much personality as you can throw into it as possible. And all the big networks steer away from conservation in a big way. We're fairly lucky in that we, to a much larger extent, control the rights to the content of our shows. So we're able to slip in those conservation messages in a much better way than we would be able to do it elsewhere. So whenever I'm talking about a species, I always like to highlight the fact that it's threatened or that it's endangered or that there's a need to preserve the habitat of this particular bird. And in some cases, you know, interview some of the experts to talk about the conservation issues facing the species in the particular country or destination that we're in.
Okay. Now, you've led tours for 12 years. That's coming from your bio that I read. So you've led tours. And obviously, when you go to some of these countries, you must use tour guides. What's it like to use other tour guides, having been a tour leader yourself?
It's great. You know, we couldn't do our show without enlisting the support of local guides in every destination we go to. And I think that's important for two reasons. Number one, there's no ways that I can be an expert everywhere in the world. There's no ways I think that I know the birds enough to be able to go on my own in destinations that I've never birded in. No matter how much studying you do ahead of time, or no matter how much you are familiar with the birds in neighboring countries or even in the continent, there's absolutely no ways that I could hold my own anywhere in the world. And in fact, I regard myself as a pretty average birder, to be honest. And the second reason, and this is probably the most important reason, is that it's really good to feature local guides on television and to give them the exposure that they deserve on a national TV show, because ultimately we're guests in their country and we need to profile the local knowledge and the local people as much as possible on our show.
All right, yeah, great. It's always interesting to see different birds. You know, a lot of bird watchers in the States, you know, they look through their field guides and they all almost have them, you know, known by heart, like which birds you might see. But it must be interesting to go to a place in, you know, either in Africa or South America and see some birds that you might not be familiar with.
Yeah, it's always great to see new birds. And as much as possible, I'm always excited about traveling to a destination I haven't been to. But having said that, you know, we do a lot of shows here in the United States, and it's always exciting just to profile even the birds that you know, because often it's not just about seeing a new bird, but it's about bird behavior and interpreting bird behavior. And even a relatively common bird can produce some fantastic behavior and make for some fantastic television. And you know, when I'm filming in North America, for instance, I not only use local guides in North America, but I'll also use some great resources like the Audubon Guides apps for the iPhone and the iPad. They're one of the sponsors of our show, and they have a magnificent product which really helps me, you know, identify birds by call and by ID and by distribution, etc. And then there's some great bird guides, you know, like the Crossley Guide, like the Sibley Guide. These books are really great resources to use when you're birding in the country. So, yes, it's great to see new birds, but it's also great to see the birds you're familiar with and use the resources to help you interpret those birds best for your audience.
Okay. Now, we got lots more to cover with James Curry, the creator of Birding Adventures TV. But we got to take a short break, but you brought up some good points already, and I want to expand on some and bring up some new stuff. But we got to take a little break, and we'll be back with more from James Curry on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the wild. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no-waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut.
Be ready for the winter season by visiting Outdoor Sports Center on Route 7 in Wilton. Outdoor Sports Center offers full-season ski and snowboard packages for all ages. Ski the slopes with apparel and accessories from Arc'teryx, Patagonia, The North Face, Burton, and more. Outdoor Sports Center, Route 7 in Wilton. Complete selections of ski and snowboarding equipment, rentals, apparel, and accessories. Visit us online at OutdoorSportsCenter.com or call 203-762-8797.
Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting, permissions, photo editing, and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's K-Y-M-R-Y Group.com or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Hi, this is Chris Bozak inviting you to check out BirdCallsRadio.com. It's the official internet home of the Bird Calls Radio program, heard right here on 1490 WGCH from 1 to 2 p.m. every Sunday. Bird Calls is your weekly look at the wonderful world of wild birds with regular features and expert guests. BirdCallsRadio.com supports the show with bird blog postings, show archives, a Contact Me button where you can send in questions for the show, and a special page for potential advertisers to learn how to support Bird Calls Radio. So check out BirdCallsRadio.com and feel free to drop me a line.
Now back to Bird Calls with my dad, Chris Bozak.
Welcome back to Bird Calls, everybody. We're having a great show with James Curry. He is the creator of Birding Adventures TV, so be sure and check that out. Bird watching show on television. Doesn't get much better than that. But James traveled all around the world. And are you still with us, James?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, welcome back to Bird Calls Radio. Now, you had mentioned right before the break about the apps that, you know, the field guide apps. And that's kind of, you know, the books are still nice to have and helpful, but the apps in the field has kind of changed bird and nature watching in a way. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, it's just amazing how far technology has come, not only in the way that we film birds in terms of, you know, optics and advances in camera equipment, but also obviously in field identification. And, you know, products like the Audubon Guides apps are just phenomenal. I mean, here you have all these resources basically at your fingertips where you can click on a particular bird, you can learn about its call, and not only one call, but it'll give you, like, in some cases, seven different varieties of calls. You'll learn about you know, different color morphs, different images, the distribution, the habits. I mean, everything you want to know about a bird is pretty much there on those apps. I mean, the apps are fantastic. Not only are they important for identifying birds, but they also have a greater role in terms of bird watching and birding science, because this citizen science gives you the idea or the option to plug in your sightings directly into eBird with the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and this helps greatly in being able to monitor and evaluate, you know, bird population numbers in the United States and trends here in the United States with our birds. So it's not only just a field guide, but it also has this great citizen science aspect to it as well. And they're just fascinating ways to get yourself acquainted with nature. And I've just seen, you know, all the different packages that Audubon Guides or Green Mountain Digital, who produces them, have come up with now with regard to reptiles, wildflowers, fish, trees. I mean, just about everything. They're coming out with these nature apps, and it's just fascinating and a great way to get kids plugged into birding and the outdoors as well.
Okay, yeah, that's something I bring up with all my guests, is how to get the next generation involved, and that's something that's important to you. You have three kids of your own, and plus anyone who's involved with conservation at all knows that we need the next generation behind us to care about birds and conservation as well. So, you know, what do you do to kind of keep the kids involved and keep the kids involved in conservation?
I think there's a couple of things, Chris. The first thing with kids, I think, is you never want to force birding on them. I think you've got to kind of lead them along the way. The moment you force something on a kid, they're generally going to rebel and not want to do it. So I just kind of lead my kids gently and take them outside whenever I can. And they've all become very keen naturalists and very keen birders. They love being outdoors. And I always try to focus on the big exciting birds, the colorful birds to start off with, to spark their interest. Like, there's, you show a kid a roseate spoonbill and it's going to be wow. You know, you show them a house sparrow and they might not be as impressed.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a case of showing them the large enigmatic birds and then kind of getting them to progress into the finer aspects of birding. But there's also some great resources that you can use for kids. I personally am a great fan of the Crossley ID Guide, for instance. They've got stunning images, all set within habitat as well, which I think is so important when you want to get kids acquainted with birding, is show them real-life pictures, but also show them what the birds look like, what they're doing. And I think the Crossley Guide does that amazingly. There are lots of different games that you can look online, birding games, bird-watching board games even, that you can get for kids. And then, of course, there's the activities. Get your kids involved in a local bird club. That kind of stuff is so important for kids. So really, there are a ton of resources out there, but really the impetus really rests with the parents. The parents can get their kids and they get their kids outdoors and they're interested in being outdoors, the kids will follow. You just can't force it on them.
Yeah, I get my kids outside and, in certain places you can't always do this, but, you know, they love to venture off trail a little bit. You know, obviously you keep an eye on them so you can see them, but they love to get off trail and turn over rocks and logs and, you know, just explore. And, you know, that's kind of what, you know, that enthusiasm is kind of what you bring to the TV. So do you, have you heard from parents or anybody that, you know, their kids enjoy your program?
Yeah, absolutely. We have quite a large following in terms of kids, and we often get requests from school teachers, school principals that have watched our show, if they can get copies of our DVDs, and we're always very good about sending our DVDs into the schools to certainly assist and help with the education of kids with regard to birding. So yeah, it's a big priority of mine. To me, there's even the little expense of sending stuff out or whatever, if it costs thousands of dollars, it's worth it if you can get kids into birding and get them outdoors. It's just a responsibility which I think we all have as birders, is to pass this on to the next generation, and we should all make a conscious effort to do that. I think it would be great if we can develop that further in the future and have a Get Your Kid Outside Day or something like that we can all partake in, because really the way technology is going and the way the kids are really sort of stuck, plugged into this technology is quite frightening. And I think we've got to use this technology to convince kids to actually spend time outdoors. So use the television media, use the apps, use the online stuff to really send the message to kids. It's quite ironic because we're using the stuff that they're plugged into to tell them to get unplugged from the stuff they're plugged into. But I think that's really what we need to do. If we want to reach kids, we've got to use the ways that we can do that, the most effective, which is TV, online, apps, that kind of stuff, and send the message that they've got to explore and unplug themselves and get outdoors. Very, very important.
Okay. Well, I couldn't agree more, and that's why I bring it up on almost every show I have, is get my guest take on how to get kids out there. And, it's probably not realistic to think that they're not ever going to have any screen time, so to speak, with a computer or an iPhone or a television. But, you know, if they spend an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours outdoors, then I feel a little bit better about when my kids watch a little television.
Yeah, no, for sure, Chris. I mean, one of the things we've had, I get a question a lot of times from parents that aren't particularly birders that have perhaps stumbled across my show or watched us do a talk at a festival or something, is question I often get is it expensive? Is birding expensive for kids? And you know, the aunts, they see birders carrying around these big telescopes and tripods and binoculars and everything, and they think, wow, this is going to be way too expensive to get my kids into. But it's not. You know, you can pick up a second-hand field guide somewhere if you need to. A pair of binoculars you can get relatively inexpensively for kids. I mean, Nikon has a great pair of binoculars called the Action Binoculars. I think they're like $60 to $80, and they're great quality, you know, and you can get your kids a pair of those and you can get into it. So for about $100, you can get your kids into birding. It's as simple as that. You really don't need to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on everything to get your kids into birding. You just need to get them out there, have the basic equipment, a pair of binoculars and a book, and you're there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, as I mentioned, obviously you bring a lot of enthusiasm to the screen and you're going out in the woods finding these things. But even with that said, maybe the perception of bird watchers, and some of them are still out there, is it, you know, maybe more of a, for lack of a better term, I guess more of a straight-laced sport. So, or hobby. So your show is not without its critics. What do your critics say, and how do you answer them?
Yeah, look, it's always going to be tough. You're never going to please everybody with a TV show. And, you know, you've got to realize that. And I think you have to be fairly thick-skinned in this industry. Otherwise, you're never going to survive. And, you know, initially, I definitely got disheartened with our, you know, some of the comments on our show from relatively serious bird watchers who would say this is sensationalizing bird watching. It's too much in the Steve Irwin guild, and it's really not what birding is about. And, you know, I respectfully beg to differ. I think that if you're going to reach people, you have to make it exciting, and you have to add an adventure aspect to it. And it can't just be about boring birds and a passive pastime, and it really has to be an active sport or an adventure. I mean, I am who I am, and I cannot change my passion for birding, and my passion for birding is the way it is. So it's definitely a subjective outlook on birding, but I think that it definitely reaches a common ground. It reaches and is appealing to most birders, most bird watchers, and is also appealing to people that might not necessarily be interested in the sport at all. But we definitely have our critics, and we definitely have people that say that we are sensationalizing birding, and that it's sometimes we get comments that it's too much about the host and too little about the birds and all that kind of stuff. So we're always going to get questions about the balance. But all in all, I think we've got it right to please the majority. And it's taken us 4 years to get there. It hasn't been an easy journey by any means.
Yeah, sometimes things takes time to get exactly how you want, and things evolve. You may have one thought in mind at the beginning, and then as you go on, it evolves. So I'm glad that you're can stand up to the criticism and, you know, and keep on doing what you're doing, because it's a good thing you're doing.
And having said that, Chris, you know, I think that, you know, you've also got to look at some of the criticism and be open to it, because there's definitely been instances where the criticism has been constructive, and where I've taken that criticism and thought about it and actually put it to good use and changed some aspects of how we've done the show. So definitely you have to also look at criticism through an unjaundiced eye and look at it as constructive when it is constructive.
Okay, yeah, good. That's good advice as well. And, of course, we're talking to James Curry, the creator of Birding Adventures TV here on Bird Calls Radio. And we got a couple minutes left, so I wanted to get into the hummingbird you found in Colombia. That's a long story, and you could tell it better than I can. So tell us about that hummingbird you found.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Chris, just to be clear, I didn't actually find it, but was certainly involved in the discovery of the bird in terms of being able to get secure video footage of it. But basically, we were contracted by Colombia to go down and film three shows in Colombia for Pro Export Colombia, who are responsible for the tourism of the country. And we went down and filmed some wonderful shows there. In fact, those shows are airing this week and next week and the following week on NBC Sports Network, so you should try catch them. But shows on torrent ducks and red-ruffed fruit crows and bearded helmet crest and just these fascinating, fascinating birds, rare tanagers, great, great shows. But towards the end of our filming, we were alerted to the fact that there was the possibility that the Bogota Sun Angel had been rediscovered in Colombia, and this was a bird that had only been known from a single skin. It had never been recorded or sighted alive, and that single skin had been recorded 102 years ago. So this was an opportunity to possibly rediscover a long-lost species. So the rest of the crew headed back to the States, and I headed down to a place called Rojitama Private Nature Reserve where the birds had been seen. And we set about filming these birds and recording them, and we actually got footage of the birds fairly easily, some really, really good footage. I put together something that I put on YouTube. You can just find it by putting in Rojitama Hummingbird or Mystery Hummingbird or Bogota Sun Angel, and the video should come up. But basically, we filmed it, and the researchers came down. The preeminent researchers in Colombia did a lot of the testing on the bird, a guy called Gary Stiles and another guy called Oswaldo Cortez is his last name. But they basically misnetted one of the birds, and there were probably at least two birds there that we'd seen. They misnetted them, they caught the birds, they took various measurements, etc., and they took two feathers for DNA sampling off the bird that they caught. And they were hoping to have the results ready in January. Unfortunately, I just heard back that they're struggling to extract the DNA from the two feathers because the feathers are very, very small.
Mm-hmm.
And they're having some problems with that, and that it may be only around May when they have the results.
Okay.
But it seems as though, and may not even have them at all. I mean, it's really tough, apparently, to extract this DNA. But the one problem here is that the two birds, or the birds that I've seen, have now since disappeared. So they can't go back and get the DNA again. So it's an absolute mystery, and it's one that's captivated the birding world because, you know, is this the Bogota Sun Angel, or is this an entirely new species? I certainly, right in the beginning, after reading the description of the skin from Gary Graves, I thought immediately that this seems to be something different, not the Bogota Sun Angel. It seemed to be a kind of sylph or a variant of sylph. And nobody will really know until we find out the DNA and the DNA testing. But it could be an entirely new species to science, could be a hybrid, could be an entirely new genus. We just don't know at this stage, and only the DNA testing will reveal that. But a big mystery, definitely.
Okay. Oh, that's great. That's great that you got it on film, too. Now, you had the bird in hand. Is it obviously the bird's, you know, safety and health is the most important thing, but is it a little frustrating now that they're having trouble that they maybe could have taken, gotten something else where it could have been, easier to find out what it was?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's definitely frustrating, but I think the guys did the right thing. You know, I think with a bird that you have absolutely no idea how many are left. Maybe there's only two or three birds left on planet Earth. You just don't know. And to compromise a bird's safety or health by taking a big primary feather or a big tail feather or something that's going to compromise the safety of the bird, I think in the name of science, is that the right thing to do? I think they made the right call by taking the smaller breast feathers and maybe having problems with extracting the DNA, but the fact that these birds have disappeared just shows how rare they are. Are they a hybrid or is it an entirely new species? We just don't know, but they've disappeared. And That's a little bit concerning. Will we ever see these birds again? We don't know.
Okay. Well, we'll certainly keep an eye on that story. And when the results come out, maybe we'll have you on for another quick chat on Bird Calls Radio. So tell us, we got a couple minutes left, but tell us about some shows that are coming up.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're filming right now, just editing right now, actually, a show we just did in Florida, centered around the Space Coast Wildlife and Birding Festival. It's going to be a great show. It features some of the really great sites along the Space Coast for birding. We're just finishing up that show. We are airing the Columbia shows right now, and we're off to Botswana on Friday, and we're going to be filming four shows in Botswana. Possibly one on wattled cranes, another show on the Pell's fishing owl, a show on western banded snake eagles and Cory bustards and some of the other great birds that can be found in Botswana. And obviously mixing a big part of those shows will be mixing in the culture and the wildlife. So we'll probably do something on wild dogs and wattled cranes and elephants and Pell's fishing isles, for example. So it should be great fun, and it's going to be an absolutely wonderful adventure, and I'm personally very excited because I get to go home. So it's going to be great fun.
Now, where Bird Calls Radio is based in New England, it reaches the, you know, the world via the internet, but we're based in New England. Any thoughts on ever doing a show up in our parts?
Absolutely, I would love to. Our show depends on, obviously, on tourism dollars to cover our production costs.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime the Connecticut Tourism Board gets in touch with us and says, hey, we want you guys up here to do a show, we'll hop on a plane and we'll be there.
Okay.
Absolute sure.
I know Connecticut just unveiled a big multi-million dollar branding plan, so maybe this will be part of it. I hope so. So one final question for you. This is James Curry, the creator of Birding Adventures TV, so check his TV show out. So if all the planes were grounded and everything came to a standstill, all the cars stopped, I'm sure you love all the places that you are, but if you could only be one place to look at birds, where would that be?
That would be Pinda Private Game Reserve in northeastern South Africa, close to the border of Mozambique, in a wonderful place called KwaZulu-Natal.
Okay, why is that?
It's just a place I called home, a place I was very privileged to work at and show people the beauty of the birds there. It's a magical ecosystem, and it's just absolutely fascinating. 450 different species of birds in a tiny, tiny area in one game reserve, basically. And it's just the bird life there is fantastic. It's unique, and it's radically abundant. So it's a place I call home, and there might be better birding spots in the world in terms of number of species and diversity, Colombia being one of them, Ecuador, Papua New Guinea. I mean, there's some fantastic destinations all around the world. But home is always home, and there's nothing like birding your own patch. So it has to be KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa.
All right. Well, thanks for giving me a good answer on that. I was afraid you were going to try to dodge the question, but so I'm glad you gave me a good one. So it's great talking to you, James, and you know, best of luck with your TV show, Birding Adventures TV, and also Aerial Assassins on Nat Geo. So, you know, best of luck with everything, and you know, thanks for being a guest on Bird Calls.
Thank you so much, Chris. It was great chatting to you. Thanks a lot, and best of luck with the radio show.
All right. Thanks, James. And we will be back with more Bird Calls after a few messages. We're going to talk about bird seed with Joe Warren from Wild Birds Unlimited. So stick with us. We'll be right back with more Bird Calls on 1490 WGCH.
Welcome to the wild. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, where you can turn your backyard into an unlimited oasis of natural harmony. With birdhouses, feeders, and baths, no-waste seed blends, and a great selection of garden and gift items, Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop is any nature lover's paradise. Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, in Bedford Hills, New York, and now in Darien, Connecticut.
Be ready for the winter season by visiting Outdoor Sports Center on Route 7 in Wilton. Outdoor Sports Center offers full-season ski and snowboard packages for all ages. Ski the slopes with apparel and accessories from Arc'teryx, Patagonia, The North Face, Burton, and more. Outdoor Sports Center, Route 7 in Wilton. Complete selections of ski and snowboarding equipment, rentals, apparel, and accessories. Visit us online at OutdoorSportsCenter.com or call 203-762-8797.
Kimry Group is a boutique media service agency helping Fortune 500 corporations, nonprofits, and local businesses in all aspects of advertising, photography, and promotions. Kimry Photo includes assignments, stock images from 1925 to 2011, consulting, permissions, photo editing, and research, as well as multimedia presentations. Kimry Media creates and executes activity for advertising, digital media, and sponsorship. To succeed and show how you can make a difference and get noticed, visit KimryGroup.com. That's K-Y-M-R-Y Group.com or contact Marty Welch Dickinson at 203-846-0359.
Hi, this is Chris Bozak inviting you to check out BirdCallsRadio.com. It's the official internet home of the Bird Calls Radio program, heard right here on 1490 WGCH from 1 to 2 p.m. every Sunday. Bird Calls is your weekly look at the wonderful world of wild birds with regular features and expert guests. BirdCallsRadio.com supports the show with bird blog postings, show archives, a Contact Me button where you can send in questions for the show, and a special page for potential advertisers to learn how to support Bird Calls Radio. So check out BirdCallsRadio.com and feel free to drop me a line.
Now back to Bird Calls with my dad, Chris Bozak.
Welcome back, everybody, to Bird Calls. We're here every Sunday from 1 to 2 on 1490 WGCH, also birdcallsradio.com. If you miss any shows, check out birdcallsradio.com. All the archives are there. We've got some great stuff and also some other interesting tidbits about birds. So check out birdcallsradio.com and feel free to let me know what you think on the Contact Me button. So we just had a nice conversation with James Curry, the creator of Birding Adventures TV, travels around the world and makes TV shows about birding. How cool is that? He also has a show on Nat Geo Wild, Aerial Assassins. So hopefully there'll be more of those episodes coming up. So be sure and check those out. Bird Calls is sponsored by Wild Birds Unlimited in Darien and also Bedford Hills, New York, and Outdoor Sports Center in Wilton. And we'll bring Joe Warren on in a little bit, as we do most weeks. He's the owner of Wild Birds Unlimited. He and his wife Pat own two stores. Joe's going to talk to us about bird seed and how it's priced and things like that. So it'll be interesting to find out if you ever go to your bird store and wonder how they come up with the pricing for the bird seed. Joe will explain that in a little bit. But first, I also write a birdwatching column for the Hour newspaper in Norwalk, Connecticut, and that's usually online. You can find that. But working for a newspaper, I get lots of news that passes my desk. So here's a little news tidbit that I got from the American Bird Conservancy, a press release that came across. The recent decision by Scotts Miracle-Gro to plead guilty to charges of distributing insecticide-tainted birdseed highlights the need for continued monitoring of the safety of the nation's bird seed supply, says American Bird Conservancy. This is not to put Scott's Miracle-Gro on the spot or anything, but it's just a release that I did get. And according to, this is from the release from the American Bird Conservancy, according to court records, in 2008, Scott's distributed 73 million packages of bird seed coated with the insecticides, may not pronounce these right, so excuse me if I don't. Storcide 2 and Actalic 5E. Not sure what they are, and if I pronounce them properly, but we do know that they're insecticides, and they shouldn't have been on bird seed. So they pled guilty and will, I'm assuming, pay a fine. But what the American Bird Conservancy, they did an independent study, and they found that they did samples from some of the big box stores who sell seed. And here's a quote from George Fenwick, the president of the American Bird Conservancy. "We found that all the tested bird seed was either free from pesticides or that pesticides occurred at only trace levels that would not threaten bird health." So that's good news, but they also stressed the importance of continued monitoring. So, you don't want to try to help the birds by buying seed and feeding them and be hurting them while you're doing that. So you want to be careful with that. And it's good for the American Bird Conservancy for checking into it and doing the testing. The release also has an interesting tidbit about people who watch birds. The top five birdwatching states by percentage of total population are: the top state is Montana. 40% of the people in Montana are birdwatchers. So Montana's number one. Maine is a close second at 39%. Vermont, Minnesota, and Iowa round out the top five. And then the states with the highest out-of-state birders, people going to that state to birdwatch, are Wyoming, got 73%, Alaska, Hawaii, Montana, Vermont, and New Mexico. So that's interesting that that's where people are going to find their birds. So we will bring on Joe Warren, who's going to talk to us more about bird seed and the pricing. And here is Joe Warren from Wild Birds Unlimited. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing well today, Chris. How are you doing?
All right. I was just talking about seed, and you had an interesting comment before we were talking about is, you know, encourage people to look at the labels and know what they're buying, right?
I really do. The bird seed market has gotten larger and larger as more and more people have gotten involved in the hobby. You can buy bird seed at specialty shops like mine, where we specialize in backyard bird watching. Or you can buy bird seed in big box stores. You can go to the supermarket. There are lots of places to buy bird seed. Some of it's really good bird seed. Some of it not so good bird seed. And the consumer really has to be careful about what they buy. I encourage people to read the labels. We're feeding birds in our backyard. This ought to be a very natural thing. If you look at a label of bird seed and you see things on it that you can't pronounce or that you don't understand, it's probably not something you want to have out in your backyard. Birds like their seed to be very fresh. They need energy, and so they want all the fat and oils that come with the bird seed. If bird seed has been sitting around in a warehouse for a year or longer, then they're not getting the full benefit that they ought to be getting from that bird seed. And if manufacturers and packagers determine that they need to put preservatives in because it's going to be sitting for an unknown period of time in a warehouse, on a shelf, wherever, then that's something you might want to think twice about before you put it out in your backyard for the birds. They don't need, the birds certainly don't need the preservatives. And if the seed has been stored long enough that it needs preservatives, then the birds aren't getting the kind of energy from the seed that they ought to be getting. So I encourage people, read the label. Look and see what's actually in that package that you're going to take home and put in your bird feeder.
Okay. Well, that's good advice for not just bird seed, but all food in general.
Yeah,
but certainly
absolutely.
For birds.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, tell us about how some of the pricing goes. Is the cost of sunflower seeds seem to spike
bird
over
seed,
the last couple of years?
Yeah, bird seed prices have gotten somewhat out of control. We here in our store have tried the best we can to keep the prices down. We reduced our prices at the beginning of the year by almost 20% because we felt it was the right thing to do. A couple of things are impacting the marketplace. Normally, you'd look at something like seed and say, well, weather conditions. Either the farmers are growing it or they're not. And if they have a good growing season, then you would expect the price ought to come down. That's not the reality today. And there's a number of reasons why that's happening. The first is, for years and years and years, the major market for sunflower seeds was to be consumed either by people. People, you know, we see the ball players in all the major league stadiums spitting sunflower shells all over the dugout. People eat sunflower seeds and they cook with sunflower seeds. The other market was the bird seed market. We put it out in the backyard and feed it to the birds. What's happened over the last number of years is that a lot of the black oil sunflower crop is going to what we call the crushing mills and being ground up to get to extract the oil, because sunflower oil is very low in trans fats. And as people are more and more conscious about healthy diet and the consumption of things like trans fats, more and more large cooking operations, the big cooking companies, the potato chip manufacturers and snack food manufacturers, are using sunflower oil and safflower oil to cook in because they're low in saturated fats. And that puts pressure on the market, on the cost of these grains. And so we in the bird food market have to compete with what's going on in the rest of the world. The other thing that's happening is these now become commodities that get traded on the commodities markets. So there's a middleman all of a sudden that's speculating on whether the crop is going to be good or not good. And they're trading the futures of things like sunflower seeds. And at the end of the food chain, we pay the price for that. We have to pay whatever they're speculating on the price being, rather than what's being driven by farming conditions the way it used to be 10, 15 years ago. And that's had a major impact on the cost of birdseed. So, people who are into the hobby have to understand what's driving the marketplace and what we, the independent retailer, can do about it. One of the things, again, this goes back to reading the label. If you see a particular bird seed within a dramatic price difference from one place to another, you need to look at that, the lower price. Is it the retailer simply cutting their margins down to almost nothing as a loss leader? That happens. People do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it the fact that, in fact, they bought it 2 years ago when the price was lower, and it's now finally gotten to their shelf to be sold? And you'll be able to tell that from the labels, because if they've kept it for that long, it'll have preservatives in it. It's the only way they can keep it.
Okay.
So again, read the labels.
Right.
But you know, if you look at a price on something and it seems to be too good to be true, you know the old adage, it probably is too good to be
yeah.
true.
All right. Well, I know a place. We've got less than a minute here, Joe, but I know of a place where you can get a free 5-pound bag of seed. Great place.
I know two places. You can come to my store in Darien, or you can go to my store up in Bedford Hills, New York. Mention this radio program, and you will get a free 5-pound bag of bird seed.
All right.
And we'd be happy to give it away, because we appreciate when people come in and let us know that they're listening. We hope we're giving good information on this radio program, and it's nice when people listen to it.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Joe. We'll talk to you next week.
Chris, have a good one. It's always a pleasure.
All right. And that, of course, is Joe Warren from Wild Birds Unlimited in Darien and also Bedford Hills, New York. We are also sponsored by Outdoor Sports Center in Wilton. And be sure and check out Bird Calls Radio. Thanks, James Curry. And we'll see you next week on 1490 WGCH.